The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We go to the news that the Energy Minister Dara O'Brien has warned that the war in the Middle East could see energy prices jump by 4 to 9%, and that the situation remains very volatile. In the UK, they're now looking at ways to break the link between the cost of electricity and gas prices. So is it time that we did the same? I'm joined now by Dr. Oliver Brown, who's a lecturer in accounting in Cork Business School at the University College Cork. Oliver, good morning to the programme.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks for having me.
Let's start, first of all, with what Dara O'Brien said over the weekend, that we could be looking at energy prices rising, not in the winter, but in the summer by 9%. Is he right?
Yeah, this is potentially even more optimistic than I would have thought. And it kind of comes as a response to Minister for Enterprise Trade saying that it could go up to 30%. And that's kind of, you know, the 4 to 9 then is coming out and saying, well, actually, if they're hedged, it might not be that bad. I think it could be much worse. Okay. It could be kind of closer to the 30%.
30%? By when?
Well, for some suppliers, potentially, yeah. So we have 4 to 9 on average. It, depending on their hedging, that's where we could start to see 30% when the hedges start to expire.
Okay, that is causing me to pause. By when? What's the timeline?
With some would have hedged 6 months, 12 months and 18 months. So in 18 months' time, we would be looking at that 30% if markets would stay the way they are now, which if we consider futures markets, which is the people buying electricity and gambling basically on the price of gas in the future, then, you know, even if the war was to stop today in the Gulf, then we're looking at prices returning to more normal by at least early 2028 with optimistic estimates, and early 2030 with less optimistic estimates.
So this war, which has been going on only for a number of weeks, you're saying could have an impact on what we pay for our energy for years to come.
Yeah, it's a structural issue with the way we have the marginal pricing. So it's set by, basically, we buy as electricity producers the cheapest unit of electricity first, up to the most expensive unit of electricity in a live market, and then everyone who supplies the electricity gets paid the most expensive rate. So let's say, you know, 60% of electricity at that point in time was being produced by renewables and 40% was being produced by gas, and gas is more expensive. Everyone who's producing gets the gas price. So that's the way the market works. And now, this actually does something good for us in one way, in that it incentivizes production of renewables because their margin is much higher than the gas margin. Mm-hmm. So it allows us to kind of predict and to put investment into renewables, and then that would break the link.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in just a moment. But just going back to what you said there, which will have shocked many people listening to this, that we could be looking at a 30% increase in our energy bills. We know as of the start of the year, there were 320,000 people in this country in arrears on their bills. This is going to lead to huge problems, Oliver, and we don't have any guarantees around energy supports from the state. Do you reckon that that's going to have to change?
If the war continues, then in the October budget coming into winter, then that will have to change, because we will start to see hedges unwind. Hedges will have been renewed at higher prices. We're looking at least 6 months of this kind of 4 to 9% now, and then we'll start to see it ramp up if the war continues. If gas prices stay high, then we will see that. So, and those will have to be considered in October.
There'll have to be a big conversation about whether those credits are targeted, because it would seem, if what you are suggesting comes to pass, that just giving those supports to people who are in receipt of fuel allowance, for example, that won't go far enough if they're going to increase by 30%.
Yes and no. Like, universal supports never really work, not the way that we intend them to. So there would be an issue where, you know, the highest income households benefit as much as the lowest income households. I know 30% is a high rise, but that's 30% in gas. So it's not 30% across all electricity. So the gas prices are up 70% since the start of the war, but we do have a mix. So we're not always using the highest gas price. 30% is the estimate based on the mix of electricity that we use. So if we can break that structure of the mix and buy in, we'll say, different types of renewables, different types of energy from the European grid, particularly nuclear from France or anything like that, where we could break that link between gas, that gas is producing less of the actual input of electricity into Ireland, then we could reduce that structurally rather than just by targeting those supports at the gas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about that then in more detail, Oliver, because at the UK, there are conversations starting around breaking the link between the cost of electricity and gas prices, because gas, as we know, sets the price of electricity. So what is the problem with breaking the link? Because more and more of our power now is being produced, isn't it, by renewable sources. So why are we linking it to the gas price?
Well, it more and more, but still gas produces about 50 to 60% of Ireland's electricity. So it's, you know, it is still the largest way of getting electricity in Ireland. So ultimately, what it means is that it sets this high price at times. Obviously, we have times where electricity renewables will be producing most of the electricity. It sets a high price, which then creates an incentive for electric, for renewable energy investment. So that's what we want. If we do break the link and, you know, we disincentivize in, investment in renewables, then we just end up pushing this problem down the line. We will still consider using gas. We will still consider using electricity because there's no incentive to further invest in renewables. Mm-hmm. So it long term, it would hurt us if we were to break this link.
But we're not getting any of the benefit of using renewables.
We are. So that there is a mix in prices. So if we do continue to invest, there's plenty of times during the summer in the winter, where wind would produce the majority of our electricity during the day. So at the point where, you know, we get to situations where renewables produce all of our electricity, then we have this extremely cheap market pricing, marginal pricing during a day where renewables are being produced for a tenth of the price of gas. So that's what we want to get to, is where we naturally break that link at times in the day where sometimes, yes, we're paying extremely expensive electricity but for gas prices, but that's only when wind is in a lull. So if we have wind most of the time, we're paying cheaper all of the time. So that would allow us to break that. And that we're kind of going on the, you know, the marginal price. Yes, it hurts us sometimes when gas is the one being used to fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
But when wind is the one doing it, then we're paying a much lower price, and then we average it across the two.
Okay. And we are getting the benefit of that as consumers, are you saying, on those very windy winter days, we are seeing the benefit of that, are we?
We're seeing it in the average price that we pay for electricity across the year. So yes, because we don't have, like, what we see as the consumers of electricity is an average price per unit. That's not the price that the grid is seeing in their production. That's mm-hmm. That's very, very complicated.
But you can see, and I can see that I can see the problem here. If the gas price increases and we're taking an average across both renewables and gas, once the price of gas goes up, we're goosed.
If it's the one making up all of the electricity in a day, yes. If it's the most expensive unit of use, then yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can't see a break in the link coming between what we're paying for electricity and the base price for gas anytime soon.
No, we have a further complication in that we import nearly all of our electricity system. I think it's 70-something percent of our electricity. So if we do that, you know, we're going to be trying to buy from Europe or the UK through their grid connections. And we're going to be saying, actually, we won't pay you the way you want to be paid. We'll pay you the way we decide that we want to be paid. So that might not work for them. You know, all of Europe does it on marginal pricing. So if we are the outlier changing the way that that market works, that may not work for them in terms of actually supplying us with electricity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this might be a naive question, but you talk about removing the incentive to move to renewable production. But everybody needs power. Everybody needs heat and light. So if you're investing in renewables just to get a share of that pie, even though the pie might be a little bit smaller because you're not getting the price of gas as a result of producing this energy, is that still not incentive enough?
Sorry, could you repeat the question? So
what I'm saying to you, just going back to your point, like if you start breaking the link between energy and gas and the price comes down, then you're removing the incentive to move to renewables. But surely it's enough of an incentive for those who are producing energy off the back of the renewables to get a slice of a pie, even though it's a smaller pie. You're still selling a product that everybody wants. It might be a bit cheaper because you're not basing it on the gas price, but it's still going to be something that has sustainability in terms of a market for you as a business person or entity.
Yeah, I think that, like, long term, we do want to reduce our dependence on gas. I think there's more geopolitical at play as well here in the actual security of supply. Wind has a relatively secure supply in Ireland. We are a very windy country. Gas doesn't always have the most secure supply. We even have storage issues around gas, storage issues around electricity. So the more that we can rely on our own homegrown, not in imported electricity, no matter how it's produced technically, but we don't want to start investing in more gas production here or more gas storage, like the LNG field that they're talking about at the moment. So what we want to do is have a situation. Ireland should be a world leader. Like we were visionary investors before in Ardna na Crusha, in national infrastructure projects that look to the future. In 50 years' time, if you think of how much gas prices have gone up over the last decade, look at 10, 15 years' time. Where do we want to be? Do we want to be in a position where we're producing all of our own electricity renewably in Ireland, where we're not importing anything? Or do we want to be in a situation where, yes, we have a mix of gas and wind, but ultimately gas is still the thing driving the price? Or we're paying an awful lot of our electricity because we're still reliant on gas, despite, we'll say, the rest of the world may be moving away from it as a security of supply and price issue.
Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is really push on with investment in renewables. And that in itself will result in a break with this dependence on the gas price.
Yeah, because we won't be importing gas, so we won't be paying the price for it, or we will be importing or buying less of it to make up a very small gaps in the production in a day. Mm-hmm. So that's where we want to be. And, you know, like the issue here is with infrastructure issues around the grid. Like there's an awful lot of limitations to say, like, obviously that's in an ideal world, we would do that. There's significant infrastructure issues in Ireland, significant resistance towards green energy projects and the investment in them, power in individuals and countryside in terms of actually producing these. So it's about a holistic approach to convincing people that renewable energy is the way we need to go.
Okay, just some messages coming in on this, Oliver. This one: rising energy costs are due to data centres, not the war in Iran. Iran is a factor, but data centres are costing us, the taxpayer, massive hikes in energy prices. What do you say to that?
I would say that is a relatively naive view of the electricity markets. Typically now as well with the newer ones, we would have them producing 80% of their own electricity. So they will reduce, they will cause reduced draw on the grid, especially as newer ones come online. Yes, they do. They have increased the demand and increased the demand on our grid. But ultimately, our grid is so outdated that infrastructure investment should have happened a long time ago anyway. We've just caused strain at a time when we didn't need it, but it actually pushed us forward in that now we're starting to think about investment in the grid because it's creaking. Now, that would have happened anyway in the next 5 or 10 years where we would start to think about that, but at a time when then everything would be more expensive anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, another thing as well is those projects and those data centers, they do cause inward investment. The taxes that we're losing are the costs that were the dead weight loss, basically, of the grid cost is being made up by tax receipts. So we should be able to use that money to invest in grid to cause us to move more towards the renewables then.
But we're not. And that is the problem that people have. I mean, a listener says that the potential savings from renewables are explicitly excluded by government policy. And they ask a question about that. Is that what is happening here, or is it more of a resistance coming from the rest of us to these projects?
I think it's largely a resistance. So, you know, in the past, every time, you know, over hundreds of years, the countryside is a resource. You know, we use it to grow food, we use it to plant trees, you know, urban centers are used for the economic investment, but the countryside is resourceful. That's the idea of the countryside. If energy is a resource, then we should be using the countryside to produce the resource that is renewable energy. Giving power, then saying that I don't like the look of basically wind farms on fields, you know, 20 kilometers away that, you know, are built near a mountain, that reduces the impact of having that resource effectively in the countryside. So we need to reduce the incentive for people to be able to, and the power for people to be able to object to those, you know, specifically locally. Through, you know, we could do that through community projects, community investment in those projects where locals that would normally object receive, we'll say, a slice of the pie from having it in their back garden, which has been proven to work. And then we also have reducing, we'll say, the length of how long it takes to get these projects off the ground from planning to judicial review, board planala, you know, all of those things need to be reduced so that if, you know, if you say you want to invest in a and you have the site acquired, you should be able to do that in 6 months to, you know, begin construction in 6 months to 1 year, not, you know, 5 to 10 years. You know, that's what we should be looking at. And that's one of the things that's killed investment, because we need investment requires certainty. If you can't get the project off the ground in a certain period of time, then you're not going to invest in that
All
project.
Right. A listener tells us that according to EirGrid's fantastic real-time dashboard this morning, gas is contributing 63% of the energy mix for the previous 24 hours. An additional 8% of electricity is imported. So that's on top of the 63%, obviously, which is imported as well. We're totally intertwined with gas for the foreseeable future as our energy demand increases over time. We have not so far been able to get ahead of the curve and build disproportionately more renewables. Oliver, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your insights. That's Dr. Oliver Brown from UCC.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.